Hey, everybody. Welcome to the GeekWire podcast. It's Todd Bishop, GeekWire editor and co-founder.
And Monica Nicholsberg, GeekWire civic editor.
We have got a lot to talk about on this show, Monica. You and I had a fascinating experience this past week covering the Amazon shareholder meeting. We're also going to give folks an update on T-Mobile and Sprint. Yes, it actually is happening.
Maybe.
Probably.
We'll see.
Kind of. We'll explain in the second segment. And then later on, of course, I mean, we have to talk about Game of Thrones with a tech twist, right?
I mean, if there's a tech twist to Game of Thrones, we better be talking about it.
Okay. All right. So stick around for that in our random channel. But let's start with Amazon's shareholder meeting. This is typically the moment of the year when Amazon gets together with its shareholders, typically a pretty mundane affair at most companies, and gives them a sense for how the last year went and what to expect in the year ahead. But Amazon's shareholder meeting has become something else. Set the stage for us here. What was going on this past week and how was this meeting different?
That's right. There were more fireworks and more controversy this year. The most obvious sign of that was the protesters who started gathering early in the morning outside of this shareholder meeting in Seattle's Fremont neighborhood, which incidentally is just down the road from the GeekWire offices, so very convenient for us to cover. But there were a bunch of different groups of protesters, all with their own cause, and they kind of organized on four street corners. Each one had its own issue. So on one corner, there are the climate change activists. On another is labor and union activists. On another is housing and homelessness. And the fourth is immigration and facial recognition technology, which Amazon has been selling to law enforcement. So there are all these meaty issues and a lot of people who are very passionate about them who came out to stand up to the company.
It's interesting because I've seen over the years in covering this event an increase in the amount of protesters outside. But this year, there was also a difference inside. There were 11 shareholder resolutions put up not by the company, but by stock owners, which was a record for Amazon and perhaps even more broadly, one of the largest slates of shareholder resolutions that any company has ever faced. Explain what was going on there.
That's what's really interesting about this is there's a lot of agitation from within at Amazon right now. The biggest example of that is this broad climate change push. So there's a shareholder resolution that was asking Amazon to put out a report on its plan to deal with the climate crisis. But I think more interestingly, there were almost 8,000 employees who signed an open letter to Jeff Bezos asking for really comprehensive climate change reforms at the company.
That led to one of the most confrontational moments of the meeting inside. Here is what it sounded like from a tweet that was put out by the group that was backing this climate change initiative, Amazon Employees for Climate Justice. Here's the audio that they put out afterward.
Before I start my time, I'd like to ask for Jeff Bezos to come out on stage so that I can speak to him directly. I represent 7,700 of his employees.
Mr. Bezos will be out later. Thank you.
Will he be hearing this speech?
I assume so.
I'm Emily Cunningham. I've worked at Amazon for the last 5.5 years. Nearly 7,700 employees have publicly asked Amazon to adopt our resolution, which calls for a company-wide plan that matches the urgency and scale of the climate crisis. I want to invite everyone here who supports this resolution to stand up with me now. We can avoid the worst of what's coming, but we have to act now. What we do today is worth exponentially more than what we do even a few years from now. Leonard Cohen wrote, "We are so small between the stars, so large against the sky. Our home, planet Earth, not distant, far-off places in space, desperately needs bold leadership. We have the talent, the passion, the imagination. We have the scale, speed, and resources. Jeff, all we need is your leadership. Jeff, will you stand with us and adopt this resolution, or will you ignore the most important opportunity we've ever had to take bold climate leadership when it mattered more than anything has ever mattered? This is not a rhetorical question. Jeff, will you join us by requesting a new ballot right now and vote to adopt the resolution?"
So that was Emily Cunningham, who is a UX designer at Amazon and one of the leaders of this climate change initiative. It was voted down by shareholders. We don't know yet by how much, but it was fascinating in part because she was directly challenging the boss of her boss of her boss, however many levels up it was. I mean, this takes some guts to stand up there.
Yeah, but she had the support of thousands of other Amazon employees. And that's what's really interesting about this. And I think potentially impactful because at the end of the day, one of the biggest concerns of big tech companies is talent. It's really competitive out there for good tech workers. And if enough of their employees are saying, I have an issue with this, and they start to think it could impact their recruiting efforts or retention efforts, then it could actually make a real difference.
So Jeff Bezos did not make an appearance during that portion of the meeting, despite being asked to come out by the Amazon employees. But he did show up later on for the Q&A session. And during that Q&A session, he addressed these questions directly.
Jeff, will you commit to S-team level goals to decarbonize at the speed consistent with the latest climate science?
Well, that's a very important issue and one that we have a lot of initiatives underway. And I'll ask Kara in a minute to share some of those. It's hard to find an issue that is more important than climate change. The science is super compelling on this. There's no doubt about it. We have a program called Shipment Zero, where we're determined to get to zero carbon as quickly as possible. It's also, as everyone knows, a very difficult problem. I'll also point out that both e-commerce and cloud computing are inherently more carbon efficient than their alternatives. Building your own data centers, very bad. Driving yourself to the store to pick up a gallon of milk or to do anything, very bad. So we're doing a lot, even intrinsically, and we have been for 20 years, but that's not what I'm talking about in terms of the initiatives we're taking. We're building solar farms, we're building wind farms, we're working hard on renewable energy, we're putting solar cells on the top of our fulfillment centers. So there are a lot of initiatives here underway, and we're not done. We'll think of more. We're very inventive.
So quick fact check there. All of those initiatives are underway. It's important to note that Amazon is still behind its competitors. Other big tech companies have announced concrete deadlines to get to certain benchmarks of carbon neutrality, and some of them are already at 100%. Another thing that is worth noting is when you talk about e-commerce, yes, a freight truck where a bunch of deliveries going from the same area to the same area that are grouped together, yes, that is more efficient than a single person going to the store and buying something. But Amazon is pushing the entire e-commerce industry toward nearly instant delivery with their two-day and same-day delivery initiatives. And environmental experts actually consider that to be moving in the wrong direction. And it's more similar to the idea of driving just yourself to buy something.
That's interesting because they are being stretched in two different ways there. It's actually in their business interest, on one hand, to be efficient with the deliveries and have one vehicle deliver multiple packages to people on the same block. But if you want to be customer-centric, people want it immediately, and that starts to become more of an individualized delivery. It's a very good point. It was interesting to watch this because in some ways, Amazon didn't get a fair shake in the coverage because there was that initial Q&A where Bezos didn't show up on the stage. You could debate whether he should have or he shouldn't have been able to jump up from backstage, presumably. But then later on, he did address it in some form. And some of the media coverage makes it seem like he didn't address it at all. And you can debate whether that's fair or not. Now, Amazon also says that they have many of these initiatives already underway. But to your point, they're also behind many of their competitors in terms of figuring out their carbon footprint, reporting on it, and setting goals to reduce it in the future.
That's right. So Google has been powering all of its offices and data centers with renewable energy since 2017. Microsoft reached 50% renewable energy in 2018, and they're planning to get to 100% in the next decade. Amazon says it wants to get to 100%, but hasn't set a deadline. And as we all know from studying this issue, there is a real-world deadline. 2050 is really when we need to radically change our emissions and our energy consumption if we're going to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. So I think that the feeling of a lot of the employees and shareholders behind this effort is Amazon's not acting with the sense of urgency that's necessary.
And ultimately, that resolution was voted down by the shareholders, along with all of the others that were up for vote this week, which was fascinating. You would think that perhaps one of them might have gotten through. Yeah.
I think they were all expected to be voted down. And part of that has to do with the voting structure itself, which there was a resolution to reform the voting structure, which was voted down. But I still think that especially the environmental activists are counting this as a win. They're getting a ton of national press. They've organized so many employees. I mean, 7,600, that's 2,600 more than the entire Nashville Operations Center that Amazon is opening that's been heralded as this big job creation engine. That's significant. And I think the point was to get Amazon's attention, and they've done that. Now, whether that's translated into action remains to be seen.
In addition to the climate change resolution, there were two resolutions related to facial recognition technology.
Yeah. So one of them would have required the Amazon board to sign off on any time that Amazon sold facial recognition technology to a government agency. And then the other would have asked Amazon to produce a report on this technology and its potential threats to civil liberties, which is something that's been raised by activists and the ACLU as a big concern.
In addition to those shareholder resolutions, there were some random questions that came up during the Q&A session. One of the ones that got a lot of attention was this one. It was a woman in the audience who is a Prime member and a shareholder, and apparently had a hard time returning a purchase that she had made. And so she decided to just bring the item right to the shareholder meeting.
Go straight to the source.
Exactly. Let's hear how that went.
Can you please return this for me?
Yeah, sure. We'll help you with that right after the meeting. Hang around a little bit, and we'll have come and help. Yeah. We'll get that return taken care
of. Thank you very much.
My apologies that you had to use this unusual venue to accomplish what should be a much simpler task. We'll also look into the root cause of why that happened. But anybody else have anything they need to return?
All right. So that was a lighter moment from Amazon's shareholder meeting this past week. We'll have full coverage on GeekWire. Monica, Nat Levy, and I were all jumping in and covering this meeting. And as you said, Monica, it's kind of fun because literally it's a long block away from our offices here in Fremont, which it's just kind of a neat thing to be able to walk to Amazon's annual meeting.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We will be right back with an update on T-Mobile and Sprint because it might be happening.
It might be.
All right. That's coming up next on GeekWire.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back to GeekWire. It's Todd Bishop and Monica Nicholsberg. Monica, another story that you covered this past week that people might have thought had gone away is the merger of T-Mobile and Sprint.
Still in the works, maybe.
So T-Mobile based in Bellevue, Washington, Sprint based in Overland Park, Kansas. They are the number 3 and 4 wireless carriers in the country. And was it last year that they proposed merging?
It was.
And this has been up and down. And of course, it's not the first time T-Mobile has tried to merge with one of its rivals. What's the latest on this?
The latest is that the chair of the FCC put out this letter saying that he was going to recommend the merger, and another commissioner said the same. So it's looking pretty likely that it'll be approved at the FCC, which is one of two federal agencies that need to sign off on the deal. The other is the Department of Justice, which is a little bit more of a complicated picture.
Okay, so the FCC obviously has certain oversight of this, and so that's a key development. And as I understand it, they agreed to make some concessions to get these commissioners on board with this?
That's right. So T-Mobile and Sprint have said that they will divest Boost Mobile, a prepaid phone service subsidiary of Sprint. And that's supposed to address some of the concerns that the merger will result in less competition in the wireless industry, particularly for low-income users. T-Mobile has also in the past committed to not raising prices for 3 years after the merger goes through, which is another concern that they'll merge and then there will be less incentive to continue lowering prices for customers because there are 3 wireless carriers in the country instead of 4 main ones.
So what now happens with the DOJ? Are there risks there that the DOJ could essentially file suit to block this, even if the FCC is on board?
There are, and a few media outlets citing anonymous sources have said that the DOJ intends to sue to block the deal.
Wow. Okay.
The DOJ and FCC look at different things, and DOJ is particularly concerned with competition. FCC is more concerned with whether mergers are in the best interest of consumers, which is kind of a squishier standard. But competition is really what the Justice Department is looking at here, and they clearly have concerns.
I think there is a case to be made that a larger third rival to AT&T and Verizon would be more effective in increasing competition, that T-Mobile and Sprint on their own are not as strong as a competitor. I can also see a case to be made where the combination of the two of them effectively creates one less competitor, and so it's less competitive. It'll be interesting to see how the DOJ threads that needle and the reasoning that they use if they do end up filing suit.
Right. And another important part of this conversation is 5G. T-Mobile and Sprint say that this merger is absolutely essential for them to deploy 5G, and they've made a lot of promises about covering the vast majority of the country, including rural areas that don't get very good service right now. And that does speak to a lot of folks in Washington, D.C., who are concerned that China is advancing past the U.S. in 5G deployment. And for those who don't know, 5G is the next generation of wireless service that's supposed to really revolutionize the technology and telecom industries by providing really fast service on your mobile devices.
Something comparable to a high-speed wired broadband connection that you would get in your home or business. The idea is that you'll be able to get that everywhere, and that unlocks all sorts of new possibilities for devices and
businesses. I mean, the last generation of wireless technology, 4G, paved the way for businesses like Uber and Lyft. These services that have become so vital to us over just a short period of time are possible because of the service on our devices. So if you can imagine leveling up again, there are probably tons of businesses out there that we don't even know about because we don't have that kind of capability yet.
Are we talking about a long process from here, a short process? We just got to wait on the DOJ?
The sources cited in these news reports say that the DOJ is expected to make a decision in the next month, so not very long.
So just as a reminder here, the plan is to create a $146 billion company. It would retain the T-Mobile name. The primary headquarters would still be in Bellevue, Washington, although they've talked about doing sort of a co-headquarters thing, too, with Sprint. So this is a big deal here in the Seattle region where we are, but it's also a big deal nationally for consumers. Even if you're not part of T-Mobile or Sprint as a customer, it could have implications for your bill with Verizon or AT&T. And we've seen that over the years as T-Mobile has rolled out its Un-carrier initiatives. It really can have an impact because Verizon and AT&T are, in many cases, compelled or forced to follow suit. All right, I will link to the coverage of this from the show notes on this podcast. We will be right back with the Random Channel. Welcome back to GeekWire. It is time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week when we talk about the random items that we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire this week. Monica, this was probably the most buzzworthy item in the GeekWire newsroom. The notion that Brad Smith should be Facebook's next CEO. This was floated by Alex Stamos, who is Facebook's former chief information security officer. He said that Microsoft's president, Brad Smith, should replace Mark Zuckerberg as Facebook's CEO. I think that's shooting too low. I think Brad Smith's got to be the next president of the United States.
Wow. Big ambitions for Brad.
Explain this one.
So Brad Smith is the president of Microsoft, and he has had this really incredible impact on the company. He's very public-facing. He takes a position on a lot of political issues. He seems like he's everywhere. I wouldn't be surprised if there were actually two of him because he's always speaking at events, and he just really brings this kind of statesman-like quality to Microsoft and portrays the company as a more mature alternative to its kind of younger tech industry companies that have been getting into all kinds of trouble lately, namely Facebook.
And so we should be clear, this was kind of quickly shot down by some of the reports, this notion that he would replace Mark Zuckerberg. But in a lot of ways, it reminded me of the Uber situation where an executive from the Seattle area who, you know, might be somewhat under the radar. In other words, Dara Khosrowshahi at Expedia was well known, but certainly not on the level of Uber CEO when he was running the travel giant. And Brad Smith is certainly well known as well, but he's not Microsoft CEO. This notion that Seattle's kind of the adult in the room when it comes to the tech industry.
Incubating measured leaders who can fix the mess in Silicon Valley. Is that where you're going with
this? Exactly. I don't know. What do you think Brad would be like as a Facebook CEO?
Well, I think he would do a good job. This reminds me that a few months ago I wrote a story. The headline was something like Facebook needs its Uber moment. And I was talking about exactly what we're discussing now, where Uber had this young, controversial leader in Travis Kalanick who, under his leadership, the company went through a lot of scandals. And the board brought in Dara Khosrowshahi, who is this more mature, measured, kind of boring leader, I think intentionally boring. And it has had an impact on the company and its reputation, I would say. Now, I can't see why Brad would ever take this job at Facebook. I think he would probably be good at it, but I don't think it would be very appealing to him.
See, that's where I disagree, because I think there is a certain mindset among some tech executives, many tech leaders, more of an entrepreneurial mindset, where they look at a situation like Facebook or Uber, and they see not a bad mess, but a fun mess to clean up and potential glory to be had if you can do it. And I think that might be at least what Dara's motivation was, a big challenge. I don't know if Brad would have the same motivation.
Yeah, and they're different. I think Uber's messes were easier to clean up. Hmm. I think that they stemmed more from the culture and leadership than from the actual business model itself. Whereas Facebook has built this giant thing that has never existed before based on its ability to collect and analyze unbelievable amounts of data. Now, we're seeing the company try to right the ship and recover from some of these privacy scandals, but that at the heart, they go to the company's business model. So I don't know that that's something you can just come in and replace the leadership and, you know, give it a car wash and make it okay.
Exactly, because Brad Smith would be walking into that situation, and a lot of Facebook's challenges are resulting directly from the fact that it gets so much of its money from advertising, and that creates pressure to essentially know as much as possible about your customers and users, which leads to inevitable security problems, privacy problems. So yeah, it would be a bigger and much different challenge. It's a really good point. Okay. Maybe I'm changing my mind on this.
Successful podcast then.
All right. So from that to Game of Thrones.
Here we go.
So Monica, you're a big fan of the show.
I was at one point in my life.
All right, so we can talk about that in a second. But Rover, the dog-sitting company that's based here in Seattle, can you explain this? Because I actually don't know who Tormund Giantsbane is.
What? You watched the show.
I did. I watch it, but, you know, I'm more of a casual viewer. I don't, like, sit there and know every single character. Can you explain this profile that they created for Jon Snow's direwolf?
Wolf. Okay, sure.
Right.
Let me set the stage. Rover is a Seattle company that connects people who have pets with people who are willing to walk and watch them, and it's this service. And in Game of Thrones, there's a very polarizing moment during this season where Jon leaves his direwolf at Winterfell to go, you know, get up to no good in the south. And Rover created a profile for Jon's friend, Tormund, who stays and agrees to watch the dog. So it's very cute, and I'm sure it got them some good publicity.
Nice. Big picture, Game of Thrones. Are you happy you invested 8 seasons of your life in this show?
I am. It was so good in the beginning for a long time, and there had never been anything like it. I really like fantasy, and the scale of it, the acting, the story, I still am glad that I watched it. I'm very disappointed, though, that the last 2 seasons just kind of fell apart and didn't do justice to the broader story.
It's interesting because I think a lot of people were complaining about the buildup to the finale, and then some people were okay with the finale.
Yeah, well, the finale would have been okay, I think, if they had taken more time to get there. This is a show that spent an entire episode about crossing a bridge. And then in the last 2 seasons, they just sped everything up to the point that it wasn't believable anymore. And they didn't create enough character development for any of the decisions to make sense. So it just felt really rushed and jarring and out of step with the rest of the show.
What are you on to next?
I've just started watching Chernobyl on HBO, which is harrowing, but really interesting. And I'm also really into Fixer Upper on HGTV right now because my fiance and I are renovating this van into a camper. It's kind of a long story, but we've gotten really into DIY.
Nice. Okay, so you're applying lessons from the home remodeling to your van?
Kind of, and just getting excited about it.
That's nice. Well, we're big Property Brothers people in our house.
Okay. Is that also on HGTV?
It's on one of them. I don't know.
This is my first first foray really into the Home and Garden Network, and I like it.
Nice. All right. Good deal. Oh, well, nailed it. Actually, nailed it is our big one right now.
Where they're bad at cooking?
Yes, where they're not cooking, at baking okay. desserts. Yes, that's our favorite Netflix show right now, because it's, you know, family friendly. All right. Enough of that. So that is it for the Random Channel, and that is it for GeekWire. Monica, thanks very much for being on.
Thanks for having me.
That is Monica Nicholsberg, GeekWire's civic editor. You can find all of her coverage and all of our coverage of all of the news from the week at geekwire.com. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
We'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.